whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune.
Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, and very pleased to have as my special guest with me in the studio today, the owner of Dove and Distaff. If you're a WCRI listener, you've been listening to commercials from Dove and Distaff for many years now, and the owner, Collar Davis, is here, a wonderful person, and I can't wait to find out everything I want to know about Dove and Distaff. Welcome to the show, Collar.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really grateful.
It's nice to have you with us, and I know that our audience recognizes your voice, and you've been doing... It's been quite a few years now, like maybe 10?
I think it's been 10. Has been pretty much since the beginning of the Rug Gallery, which was in 2008. So it's 10 or more.
10 or more
10
years.
10 or more years. A long, long time, Mike.
But I always look forward to you coming in to record your commercials because you are extremely well prepared. Come in and... I was going to say 9 times out of 10, but it's probably 99 out of 100 where you come in one take, and there you go. It's because you know what you want to say, and you know your business.
I've had a pretty long streak. I don't like it when I break my streak at all. You know that. I'm really distressed when I break my streak. Pretty much the only time I ever did have to re-record was a morning when, before I had come to record, the fire department had called me and told me my building was on fire, and I had gone to town and met the firemen before I came here. So by the time I got here, I was a little bit shook up, and I didn't manage the first take. But I think that is literally one of the only times I've done 2 takes. I don't like to do it again.
It's amazing. And I think it's a testimony to the fact that when I say well prepared and know what you're talking about, that obviously translates to business because the business has been around for more than 10 years, more than 20 years, more than 30, more than 40. How long exactly?
My father started the business in the late 1950s when he moved here from New York City. And he was a dealer of early American furniture. He loved brown furniture, and he originally started his business in a building in Peacedale that in the 1800s had been a tea room called the Dove and Distaff. And when he moved into the building, it was empty at the time, but the sign was still leaning on the wall. And he pretty much just picked the sign up and put the word antiques underneath the words Dove and Distaff. So that was how we got our name.
So it was from a tea room.
It was from a tea room that was in the mills down in Peacedale in the 1800s. And at the time, the dove was the symbol for a moment of peace, and the distaff was... One of the meanings of the word distaff is the thing that sticks up on the back of the spinning wheel that feeds the fiber down around the wheel. And that was the symbol for the industry because it was a textile industry down there and that those mills. Those are textile mills in Peacedale. So the dove was the symbol of peace. The distaff was the symbol of the industry. And it was a moment of peace within industry. And when I was younger and less informed, I used to think that the women who worked in the mills were the women having tea in the tea room. At some point in my life, it was clarified to me that that is not who had the tea in the tea room. The tea room was for the ladies who lunch. But you can find pictures of it in the Museum of Primitive Culture in Peacedale. And I have some postcard pictures of it, and there was sort of an outdoor garden. But that was where my father took the name, the Dove and Distaff, from. And he... as I say, was a dealer of early American furniture. He repaired it and refinished it and restored it. And somewhere along the way, upholstery came in because frequently it would need to be upholstered as well. That was sort of just part of the restoration. And according to the story that I've heard in my life, I think at some point another upholsterer closed his shop and asked my father if he'd like to buy all the equipment. And my father said, sure. And I have a feeling the upholsterer may have come with it. I'm not sure. But that was how the upholstery end of the business started. And then he bought a building on Main Street in Wakefield, down next to Paul Massey Chevrolet, that in the early 1960s that he moved into. And that's where the Dove and Distaff has been ever since. So that building now holds an upholstery shop on the first floor, where I do slip covers and drapery and soft goods, indoor cushions, outdoor cushions, almost anything soft in the upholstery world, as well as furniture of all kinds, sofas, chairs, dining room chairs, benches. So downstairs is about somewhat delayed gratification, but custom work, getting exactly what you want and not having to do anything. We do not offer a design service, but we certainly try to guide the customer in the right direction so that they can make their own
something they can
well-chosen selection. Exactly. I encourage people to figure out what it is they love, because I don't think it really matters what I love, but it does matter what you love if it's going to be in your living room. So it's important to me that you are able to determine what you love, and we guide you a little bit, but we don't offer a designer service. We're a workroom. And in 2008, during the low point of the economy, I somehow thought it might be a good idea to add to my business, and I had sold the furniture after my father died, and I had tenants upstairs in my building, and I saw rugs from a company called Dash and Albert in another town, and I thought to myself, that really looks like something that could sell in Wakefield, and I feel like there's a little, there's an opportunity there. So I opened a rug store first in just one room of the upstairs of my building, and I think when it was still in that one room was when your salesman came in and sweet-talked the lady I had working for me, and that was how I started to advertise, because she came downstairs and she said, oh, he's such a nice boy, Carla. You must advertise with WCRI. So,
well, it's nice that we had a nice
boy. It is indeed. Nice, you still do. You still do have a nice boy out there. So that was how the rug gallery started, and it has expanded over the past 11 years to all seven rooms upstairs in my building. I carry a company called Company C Rugs. I carry Dash and Albert Rugs. I carry fine linens and bedding and shower curtains and bath mats and bath products and beautiful pajamas.
And bath robes,
slippers, anything with bath in it, including lotions and a beautiful perfume called Kai perfume that we sell a lot of that people really seem to love. So it has added to my business in a nice complimentary addition that has done well and gives me pleasure.
So it's almost come full circle from back in the early, very early days of the Dove and Distaff Tea Room in a textile building to now, many, many years later, coming to the fact that you deal mostly in fabric.
I deal mostly in textiles of different kinds. I do. Right. I do. I love them. I just love them. I love patterns and colors, and I love people who take a chance.
And you mentioned the tea room and your thoughts of when you were very young, of how it must have been so nice for the women, you know, to go to the tea room and how work was and things. I grew up in an environment where my grandfather and father were in the textile industry and ran some very large textile mills. And I always thought that, oh, what a nice place to go, textiles. And I found out very differently.
Oh, yeah, that's a brutal job, right? That's a brutal job. That's what was so ridiculous when I thought that they were having tea. And I mean, just how silly of me.
So now, as far as things that you do, people can bring things into you to have them reupholstered. They should have some kind of an idea what they want to go with. They don't want to mix paisley and plaid.
Yeah, but you know, if they want to mix paisley and plaid, that's fine. I just want them to know what they want. They generally, people can bring things to me. I also can pick things up. That certainly goes hand in hand with I don't expect someone to bring me their sofa. We pick up their sofa. So it goes in either way. The initial consultation is often helpful if the customer has a photograph that I can look at their furniture and I can sort of give them a number. And they can determine whether they care to move forward or not. But at that point, no one's really put too much skin in the game.
Right.
So once we have determined that you're ready to move forward, then we select fabric together. I have a fabric showroom with thousands and thousands of recently.
Yes, you do.
I do. I have lots and lots of fabric. We've recently updated our library, which has been a summer-long endeavor for a young man to try to get me organized, which has been really good because it's not easy to organize, Carla. And it's made it so that when a customer looks at fabric, I can authentically say, yes, I can get that for you, which during the pandemic changed a little bit, the way it changed with everything. But I had several instances where you couldn't believe how many different times someone would choose something that had been discontinued or that I couldn't get or that was no longer available. So hopefully we're kind of catching up a little bit with that and organizing a little bit. And then I will take a deposit from the customer and you will be moving forward on my list. My list during the current year has lengthened. We're churning through it. We're trying to get through it. But it is, as I say, there's never immediate gratification on the first floor of my building. There is delayed gratification on the first floor and immediate gratification on the second floor.
Now, being in the area of the state, the southern part, close, not too far from the beaches and so forth, do you get a lot of summer residents that come in and say, we need to do this for our summer house?
I do, yep. I would say the majority...
They can't convince you it's going to be done in 2 weeks, though.
Now, that is often the case. There is often a level of demand there that can exceed my abilities. But I would say that there's a good percentage of my business that is second homeowners here in Rhode Island, people who do not live here year-round. Mm-hmm. Many of them only come here for a portion of the year or come on weekends. But there's no question a large part of my business is... as opposed to, you know, the person living down the street.
Right.
It's more the person who lives in New York or Connecticut.
And I guess that's kind of good news business-wise, because obviously if someone, I shouldn't say obviously, but probably if someone has a second home that they're coming to, then they're not expecting you to refurbish their couch for $20.
That is exactly right. I don't know where we'd be without those people. That's exactly right. Because what I do is a specialty, and it isn't an economic... option generally. It's you can certainly go buy furniture for less than you can have furniture custom upholstered. There's arguments for both sides, but I don't negotiate my prices. I don't compromise on my prices because the hours that I work are the same. No matter what I'm charging you, it's gonna take me the same amount of time to do your furniture. So my number is my number. That can be tricky to convey sometimes, but it's just a fact of what I do. There aren't too many people who do what I do anymore, and if you have something that's special to you for whatever reason, it doesn't matter whether the value of it, the monetary value of it, outweighs the cost of what matters is whether you like it and how much you want to keep it, or whether your cat enjoys sitting in it, or whether it fits under the windowsill, whatever it is, that is what gives a piece of furniture the value to have it upholstered that you want to keep.
You must have some great stories of people whose taste is not like yours or like anyone else's. I know that when I was just after I was married, when I was very young, I was breaking up my mother's household, so to speak, because they had moved down south. So I had some furniture and some that was very important to me. And then some others that I couldn't really deal with. I had what was called a Duncan Fife couch.
I know just what a Duncan Fife couch is.
Do.
I'll bet that was really beautiful. What happened to that?
It was kind of charcoal, almost navy blue black, with some small flowers, embroidered or whatever you call it. And it was beautiful. And my cousin wanted to use it. And she said, you know, it's getting a little bit frayed, so I'm going to have it reupholstered and use it for this. I only need it for 2 years, and I'll give it back to you. It'll be all brand new. And I thought, well, that's great. This is an opportunity. She gets to use it. It's a family thing. It's my cousin.
She gets to pay for it.
Right. She gave it back. I still have it. It's in my cellar. I should take a picture of it and show it to you. It's bright orange.
Oh, Mike.
So I'm sure there's stories you have like
that.
Yeah,
I do not always love what my customer chooses. I want them to love it, as I say. But to be honest, for me, the norm is more blue or beige. We rarely have somebody make a mistake with something outlandish because risk is hard for people. I upholster more in blue and beige. And actually, we do a lot of things in white. I do a lot of work in white that people are always saying, you know, why do people choose white? And it's because you can see the dirt and you can bleach it and you know what's there.
Right.
I like it when people choose white because I'm pretty sure they're going to be back pretty soon, and that works for me. But, you know, white is good. You want white, that's fine. But I've done some really fun, you know, I've upholstered in cow hides, and you know, I've definitely done some things where I was entertained by the person's choice. I did a chair for somebody recently that was in a spotted cow furry fabric, and I remember her saying to me, you know, when I'm gone, my grandchildren are all going to say, oh, this was Mimi's chair. And I said, yeah, they are. They're all going to remember that was your special chair. And you know, there is something to that, because the truth is, when a customer comes in and is looking to have a piece upholstered that belonged to someone special, just all bets are off. Like, almost no. If it was your mother's chair, like, no matter what the number is, you're going to go for it, because right. Sentimental value has no price on it. Right. So
now, we should remind everyone that this is not like a big box store where you can walk in from 8 in the morning till 10 at night. That it's a very specialized place, and you do have a website that people can go to and get the hours of operation, but basically, hours of operation for you are...
Currently, the hours of operation are limited due mm-hmm. to limited workforce that has been the way we came out. So we are in the shop receiving customers from 11 to 3, Monday through Friday. And on Saturday, the rug store is also open from 11 to 3. I'm certainly there other times.
Right.
Those are the times when I'm currently making appointments and seeing customers, and my front door is open. My website probably does not reflect that because it has not been updated. Okay. But there is a sign on the door that reflects that. And ideally, anyone who wants to speak to me contacts me beforehand via the phone, or makes an appointment with me online so that we can...
Okay. What's the phone number?
The phone number for the downstairs upholstery shop is 401-783-5714. And the phone number for the rug store upstairs is 401-284-1170.
All right, we're talking with Carla Davis, the owner of Dove and Distaff. We have some very interesting things to talk about in the second portion of our program, which we will have right after these brief messages. Welcome back to Company Break. I'm Mike Mano. Happy to be sitting with the owner of Dove and Distaff. Carla Davis is here, and we've been talking about the business and how long it's been going and the different products that are going on. And it's an amazing story. But one other thing that's amazing about Carla that I found out a couple years ago is a little bit of love for animals. And not only do you have a dog, but you have some unusual friends, right?
I have 15 alpacas.
Oh, I'll say that slowly now.
I have 15 alpacas on an alpaca farm called Matunik Alpaca. And I raise the alpacas for fiber, because alpacas make a truly remarkable fiber that is similar to cashmere but doesn't have any lanolin, so it doesn't make you itch in any way, in the way that any kind of wool might.
So just people can get a picture of this if they've never heard of it before. If you can picture a sheep and the wool that you shave off of the sheep, or how shear off of it, I guess is the correct term.
It is.
It's similar to that with alpacas.
Right? It is similar to that with alpacas. Alpacas have a finer fiber than sheep do, and a little bit longer sometimes, not always, but sometimes. But the key difference is that alpaca fiber does not contain lanolin, and lanolin is the ingredient in wool that makes it itch. So alpaca fiber does not have that. It is a little bit lighter than wool. It's a hollow core fiber that holds air, so it is especially warm. When people tell you they have alpaca socks, they'll usually tell you those are their warmest socks. If you had an alpaca jacket, you would not be wearing it in July. Alpaca fiber is very, very warm and insulated and waterproof due to the fact that the alpaca fiber has a hollow core which holds air.
Hmm.
When I first met alpacas and I realized that they make something akin to a cashmere sweater, I found that to be a very convincing argument for raising livestock. I really like cheese, and I really like eggs, and I really like other things that animals create, but cashmere-type sweaters are really exceptional as far as I'm concerned. I also now, fell in love with the animals themselves. The animals.
You won't find them running around at Scarborough State Beach or anywhere in Rhode Island or anywhere in New England.
Generally, they are a... Oh, I've lost the word for an animal that is...
indigenous?
No, they are an animal that is only raised by farmers. There's a word for that, which I've lost.
Really?
Like a cow. You don't see wild cow, right? You don't see cows out in the wild. Cows are...
There you go.
I've lost it. I can't think of the word. I'm sorry. Right. But
somebody right now is looking it up.
Yeah, it's right on the tip of my tongue, and it's going to come to me later. But alpacas are pretty much only raised by people. They are part of the camelid family. There also are not many wild camels. There are camels. There are llamas. There are alpaca, and there are vicuna. So there are four members of the camelid family that alpacas are part of. You do not shear camels, but you could shear a llama. You do shear alpacas because we're living in a climate where the fiber really needs to come off them because they'll be too warm. They're not accustomed to living in a climate that gets to temperatures of ours. So you really need to get that fiber off them to keep the animal comfortable. The same way you need to do with sheep. It's uncomfortable for the animal when it gets really warm. So
no different than a haircut.
So during the winter, they grow this really amazing coat that's thick and lustrous and beautiful. And when spring comes, I'll be out there in the field, and as it gets warmer, I'll take off one big layer of my coat, and then in sort of April, I'll take off another layer, and then in May, suddenly I'm down to just a sweatshirt, but my animals are still wearing their heavy coat. So you can really feel that you need to get it off them. So you get it off them yearly. They feel great for the summer. They really enjoy it. And then when the weather starts getting cool again in the fall, they start to grow their fiber again to protect them from the elements.
So you said yearly. So you only do this once a year?
You only do it once a year when it gets warm. Yep.
So it's not like getting eggs from chickens.
It's not like getting eggs from chickens or trimming toenails. It is something that you only do once a year. It's a bit of a scene. The alpacas don't like it in the same way that sometimes when you see a sheep being shorn, you can see that they sort of balance the sheep up on its tailbone and the sheep almost looks as if it's sort of mesmerized. They kind of roll it back and forth and they shear it. That is not the way it works with alpacas. Alpacas are not entertained or mesmerized by any of it. They really don't like it, and they show it very clearly that they don't like it. So it's a event that happens once a year for each alpaca. It happens pretty quickly. We trim their teeth and their nails at the same time and do some other sort of animal husbandry while you have them in that position, and then they get up and they shake it off, and they don't really recognize each other, but they feel better.
That's good. And it's yearly done in the spring?
It is in the spring. It's in the late spring. It's literally, it's generally mid-May, early to mid-May.
We are tomorrow, 4th of July, by the way. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you so much.
It happened just a couple weeks ago.
It did. It happened a couple months ago. It happened on May 17th.
May 17th.
Okay. So it's about a month and two weeks now. And it was perfect timing this year. Some years it's freezing right after it happens, and you just sort of feel bad. You can go out there and put coats on all of them, but I don't have 15 coats. This year it got really hot the Monday after we had done it on a Thursday. So it the timing of it felt really good to me. I'm always wanting them to be comfortable.
Okay, so now you mentioned you have a number of these animals. How much product do you get, so to speak? Or how much can you make a sweater out of one alpaca?
Yes, you could absolutely make a sweater out of one alpaca. Each alpaca yields somewhere between 10 and 15 pounds of fiber. You then take the fiber to a mill, and the mill does various things with it. I have my fiber spun into yarn, and depending on the weight and the size of the skein of yarn you are having created from your fiber, you might get 20 skeins of yarn from an animal. You might get 30 skeins of yarn from an animal. But it adds up surprisingly quickly over the years. One of the things I have learned in my tenure is that the consumer actually would prefer to have the finished product, meaning there are five people who want to knit some mittens. there are 500 people who want to wear the mittens.
That's right.
So you really need to have those mittens made. So there are a number of different avenues where you can have that done. I've had socks made. I've had some mittens made. I've had hats made. There are various different avenues that you can have things machine sewn or knit. I've also had a situation where I had a group of ladies in a senior center who were sitting around knitting things with a tunic alpaca yarn, which were extraordinary. We still have lots of them in the shop. They're just beautiful. Those are really hand knit from my own animals, which is a very nice, small, tight circle that I really like very much. So when you're buying that product, you're really buying something directly from my animals.
Right. And when you have the raw product, you've just done it 6 weeks ago, whatever it was,
You send it off to a mill. I use a mill called Still River Mill in Connecticut.
So New England.
Oh, yeah. Everything is, there are several mills in New England. Most of them are a little bit up north. There is actually one in Block Island. There's one called North Lights that is right in Block Island.
Wow.
Yeah. They're, alpacas are that sort of secret that once you know they're around, you actually realize that there's lots of them around. But if you don't, if you're not really sort of keyed into it, it wasn't until I started stalking alpaca owners in the beginning of my alpaca nervous breakdown that I realized how many alpaca owners there are in Rhode Island and how they're actually really around every corner, but you don't normally see them.
Now, if people want to purchase the mittens that you said you've had made or hats or whatever the product is, there is a section of the store that has it all, right?
There is indeed. There are two different sections of the store on Main Street in Wakefield. Downstairs, our alpaca store front has all the small alpaca items, the hats and the mittens and the yarn and the socks and a lot of really cute little alpaca animals and fun little kits to make things with alpaca fiber. And then upstairs, within the rug gallery, there is a room with larger alpaca items, blankets and sweaters and rugs and beautiful slippers and just sort of larger things that didn't actually just fit downstairs. So there was so much stuff we had to have another room. We had to overflow into another room upstairs. So at Christmas time, the alpaca store is a very busy place. It's a really awesome gift. There are a lot of really nice things in there that anyone would be happy to get. You don't sell as much of it in July when it's hot because it just doesn't sell as well. But in the cold months, in the gift-giving months, alpaca items are always a really well-received option.
It sounds like a great opportunity for people to give that gift that is a little bit different.
Yeah, and local.
But local and natural.
Exactly.
And that's a very important thing. Well, we've talked in the first segment about the store and its history and how long it's been around and all the various products you can get there. And now the alpaca saga. The alpaca saga. But it sounds like something that should be a documentary on PBS or something where people come in and find out how this all works, because very interesting to me. And thank you for what you do there. And thanks to you for continuing to be a community leader, a little side aspect that you probably wouldn't talk about. And now I'm getting the evil eye from her, like, don't tell people how nice I am, because you do spend a lot of time promoting the community. You're always one of the first ones to say, shop in Wakefield, shop local, and so forth. And I know that you're involved in theater and that you're involved in historical things. So thank you for doing all of that.
I'm so grateful to live where I live, Mike. I feel that we are so incredibly lucky to be surrounded by the things that we are surrounded by here. And Main Street in Wakefield has just been the most wonderful place to own a business. I'm really grateful to be there. And right now, Main Street in Wakefield is having a renaissance. There's a real buzz down there, which is just great.
Excellent. Well, get out and visit Wakefield and go to Dove and Distaff, where you can entertain yourself for quite a while. It's not one of those stores you want to walk into and spend 5 minutes. It's going to take you a while. So do that and check it out. And Carla, thanks for coming in today and sharing your stories with WCRI.
Thank you so much for asking me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
To the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Company Break.
Whistle while you work.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's presentation of Company Break. I'm Mike Maino, hoping you have a great weekend.